The following is intended solely for the use of those with a sense of adventure.
I'm shaking the dust of this town off my feet, and I'm going to see the world.
This is Travel with Hawkeye. Here's your host, Mark Hawkeye Lewis.
We had National Geographic writer Joe Yogers with us at the beginning of the year. He had a brand new book called 100 Drives, 5,000 Ideas. And since a lot of people this summer for traveling, they're really basically just sticking to road trips, I thought we might kind of delve into Joe's other two books. Last week on the podcast, we had 100 Parks, 5,000 Ideas. And this week, Joe, we wanted to have you back to talk about also the book 50 States and 5,000 Ideas. So joining us again on this podcast, one of my favorite people to talk to, Joe Yogers, is back.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
Now, this book actually came out 3 years ago, but as I told you off the air, when we started and we had you on, when we talked about 1,000 Drives, 5,000 Ideas, it's been our most popular episode of the year. So I thought, let's go to all the books that you're talking that you've written. And this book, the idea is every state has things that are interesting. Is it evenly divided? Each state has, like, it's 50 states, 5,000 ideas. Is each state have the same amount of ideas, or does it just not work out that way?
No, there are actually different size chapters. So there are some states that are bigger, as you know. Texas, Florida, California, New York are the three that are four that come to mind that probably have not necessarily more space, but probably more sites than other states do. And there's smaller states like Rhode Island and Delaware that are going to have fewer just based on the fact of their geography. So it's not even, I have to admit that.
Okay.
But all 50 states are in there, and there's a lot of ideas in each state. And on top of that, there's also the 14 Canadian provinces and territories that are also in the book.
Oh, fantastic. That is fantastic. Now, let me ask you a question. Have you personally been able to visit all 50 states?
I have, yes, I have.
Okay, because I have four more to go, so I'm, and that's one of my bucket list items is to visit all 50 states. So,
four do you have to go?
I have Indiana and Wisconsin, which I've driven through and actually transferred a plane, but I don't count that as actually visiting. I need to go there. I need to go to West Virginia, and I need to go to North Dakota.
West Virginia was the last one that I visited out of the 50.
And what did you do when you were in West Virginia? And let's start there. What did you do in West Virginia, and what's in the book from West Virginia? What do I need to see there?
Well, there's a lot of things in the book, including exciting things to do in the Appalachian Mountains and in the Alleghenies in West Virginia. But I specifically went there because I'm kind of a big history buff, and I wanted to go to Harper's Ferry.
Oh, okay.
So that was my trip. I had a gig to do in northern Maryland for a week, and I took a day off and drove over to Harper's Ferry and did the hike across the famous bridge there and explored the old town and went to some of the Civil War sites and walked a bit of the Chesapeake and Ohio Canal, the canal towpath there. So there's actually a lot to do in a very small area there because that's where the Shenandoah River comes down into the Potomac River. So it's a beautiful place, and it's full of history, and it's got great outdoor activities and some pretty cool bars and restaurants, too.
Interesting. Yes, and that, of course, is Harper's Ferry. If you're not a history buff, that goes back to John Brown, the abolitionist, and that's where all that took place there, his fort, which really is not really much of a fort. It really looks more like a small schoolhouse almost.
It's a brick building that could be a warehouse, a schoolhouse, a church, anything like that. It certainly didn't look like a fort, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But I guess you can fortify anything.
Yeah, and I believe also the Appalachian Trail goes through there too, doesn't it?
That's right. Goes right through there. Crosses from one state to the other across one of the bridges across the Potomac and goes straight up a hill over on the Maryland side and keeps going north.
So that's a couple of things in West Virginia to see on the list of 5,000 ideas. Let's talk a little bit about my home state, Texas. What is on the list there? Now, the things that you're looking for, they're not like the world's largest ball of string. We're not going for that, are we?
Not so much in that book. In the road trip book, the 100 Drives, which we talked about last time, I'm going more for a lot of quirky roadside stuff like that.
Yeah.
Because there was just more space for it. But in 50 states, it's really kind of getting down to the brass tacks. And it's not written so much for a person who lives in that state. if you're in Texas and you want to go to Florida, this is a great book to look at and decide, wow, these are things cool things I really need to do in Florida or Maine or Washington State or Alaska or whatever. But if you're living in Maine or Washington or Florida and you want to go to Texas, this is the perfect book for that. So, you know, all the big stuff is in there. You know, the Alamo and the Johnson Space Center and Padre Island and Big Bend and stuff, like, you know, Palo Duro Canyon, things like that. So it's really for people who are not from Texas, who don't know it well, who want to get some ideas of really what are the big things they should hit in Texas.
Now, let me ask you on the other thing. Is there something that's in your book that a lot of people said, I never knew about that, I got to go visit that, or that's something I had no idea existed?
Wow, you're asking me to think back on something that I wrote 4 years ago.
I know. We've had a lot of time in quarantine. I'm sorry.
Yeah, really. I don't know. I came, you know, researching it and going around the country to places I hadn't been before. I did come across a lot of stuff that I didn't know about. And you kind of hear names or, you know, facts and figures. But it's, you know, again, if you live in the region, you probably know about it. But if you live out on the West Coast like I do, then there's a lot of stuff in the Midwest and the South and the Northeast that I had no idea about, and also Canada. I had been to Montreal way back when I was in college to go to the Jazz Festival. And that was the last time I was in Montreal. And going back there and seeing what a cool international city it is, but even more so, Quebec City in Canada, which is like stepping into a European city. And seeing as, at least for the time being, Americans can't go to Europe, you know, as soon as we can go to Canada, I would say, you know, get your European quotient by going to Montreal and Quebec City. So those are some of the things I discovered. You know, I had never been to Manitoba, and I went there in the middle of winter. Well, actually, it was the fall, but there was still snow on the ground. So I discovered Winnipeg with snow on the ground, and then I flew up to Churchill in northern Manitoba to basically see the annual polar bear migration, which I didn't really know about before. But it's really cool to be sitting in your little hotel there and look out your window and seeing a big polar bear wander down the middle of the main street.
That's incredible. That is amazing. I would have never thought there'd be something like that.
Yeah, and they actually have a polar bear jail there. If the polar bear wanders into town, they have a special branch of the police force that goes out and darts them and puts them in a cage, and they go to the polar bear jail, and they sit there for a couple days while they basically run some tests on it to make sure they're healthy and they're not diseased and they're well fed enough. Then they dart them again, and put them in this big net and that attached to a helicopter, and they fly them out to the wilderness far away from the town. So that's something I came across, you know, researching 50 states and 14 provinces. And so that's the kind of the Canadian part of it.
Can I interject here real quickly about Quebec City? Two things. Yeah. Number one, I just saw this on Scott's Cheap Flights. If you like to travel, you should get that free email. They had tickets to Quebec City for like $200 round trip right now. So,
wow, that's great. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really good to go there. And secondly, that city's so amazing too, because the wall from the city was inside a wall, the old part, and the wall still exists. It's right in the middle of the town. Cool. It's amazing.
It's completely surrounded by a wall. The wall, the entire wall, is basically a Canadian national park, mm-hmm. and even the part that's still, and the Canadian Army still has a base there in the biggest part of the fort. So it's still a functional military base after 400 years, which is amazing.
Yeah, it is a place to visit. It really is. And we mentioned this last time you were on. We were talking about how it's a little bit like going to Europe. You can drive there if you want. I say it's a little bit like Europe. It's a little bit like Paris, Boston, and San Francisco all miniaturized together.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. So those are kind of the things I came across. You know, driving through the South, it's just amazing how good the food is and how much it changes from place to place. So not just the South, but the Midwest and that, the whole part of the country that I didn't know before. You know, when I went to Kansas City to basically do the write-up, I had to have Kansas City barbecue.
Of course.
Right? I mean, you got to do that. And then when you go down to the Low Country in South Carolina, you know, you've got to have the the she crab soup and the sweet potato pie and things like that. And it's I'm really glad to see that despite everything, there are still really strong regional food cultures in the United States, and I think that comes out in 50 states. And also the road trip book, because you know, when you're a road warrior, you got to stop and fuel up on food at some point, and there's just great places to eat everywhere.
You know, it is interesting, though. I hear this all the time, that we're becoming more homogenized as a country. If you went back like 70 years ago, you know, there'd be different people would know what part of the state you were from your accent.
Sure.
And
sure, yeah.
That's mm-hmm. kind of disappeared a lot. I mean, the first time I met someone who had a real true New Orleans accent, I was like, where are you from? It sounds like you're from Boston. Oh, I'm from New Orleans. I mean, it was that distinct. But the food is the one thing that has really still stayed with us, the regional food and so forth. And speaking of barbecue, that's one thing, if you travel around a lot, you probably notice that barbecue is very different in different parts of the country.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It's different. You know, Texas and Memphis and Kansas City have very distinct barbecue cultures. And it seems like you could probably find a dozen, if not 20, different barbecue genres in the United States.
I know. It's like the only thing in common sometimes, I think, is actual meat. Is that they're started with meat. And what they want, how they want to cook it, what they want to barbecue from what animal, it's all very, very different. It's all fascinating, too. Can I ask, did you get a chance to go to Hawaii, or did you visit all 50 states for this book, and or did you do some, you know, where you had to farm it out, or did you do this all by yourself?
No, I didn't farm any of it out. I did not go to every 50 state for this book. Because some I had been to a lot already.
Okay.
I mean, my mother was from Arizona, and as a kid, we went there for summer vacation. When I started having my own kids, we did 8 straight years of family camp in the mountains of northern Arizona. So I had been to Arizona a lot already. I didn't need to go back. And it was kind of the same for Utah and Nevada, because I'd been there a lot as a kid or a college student, and Oregon, where I went to grad school. So I got my journalism degree at the University of Oregon. So I didn't really need to go back to the states that I was more familiar with. To answer your question about Hawaii, I don't recall if I specifically went back for this book, but I go there about every 2 years. I mean, it's close to where I live. There's direct flights now. I've been to all of the big islands now, managed to get to all of them, including Molokai was the last one, and Lanai were the last two to tick off my list. And I went back again for the National Parks book, and I went back again for the Drives book for road trips. And I did 2 road trips in Hawaii last year for that book that came out just recently.
What road trips did you do in Hawaii?
Well, there's the Big Island Belt Road, which is the road that goes all the way around the biggest island, you know, the island of Hawaii.
Yeah.
And which you could easily do in a day's drive, but I basically map it out as a week-long trip with stops along the way. You know, you fly into the Kona Coast, you drive south around the southern tip, which is the southernmost tip of the United States, and also the first place where the Polynesian people migration landed in the Hawaiian Islands. And then you go up the black, what I like to think of as the Black Sand Beach Coast to Hawaii Volcanoes National Park, and then into Hilo, and then up over the highlands where the Paniola Cowboys are, and then back to the Kona Coast. And that's a great week-long road trip in Hawaii that takes you through different landscapes and different things to do, outdoors and indoors. The other one I did was, you could easily do as a one-day trip, is circumnavigation of Oahu. If you're staying in Honolulu, it's easy to just rent a car and drive around the island in one day and see what there is to see, from Pearl Harbor to, you know, to the Banzai Pipeline surf place, surf break. But I did it as a two-day trip with a stop at a small hotel on the North Shore.
You know, I went to high school in Hawaii, and my sister lives on the Big Island. And if you can spend a whole week driving around the Big Island, there is so much to do there. My brother-in-law, who's Hawaiian, says it's the only place on the earth that has all the different climates. It has desert, it has rainforest, it has tundra on the top of Mauna Kea. It's an island that has everything. It's really a fascinating place.
Oh, it is. It's amazing. And the weather changes so much, like you said, in the terrain. You know, and you go from that dry side on Kona where it's like a desert, a volcanic desert. And I remember driving over and reaching the little town, the little village of Volcano, and in just outside the national park. And the place where I stayed there was in the clouds for 2 days. I didn't see the sunshine until I went down to the shoreline there. So it was just like, am I on a different planet? It was just, it's so strange to go from one side of the island to the other and have it change so dramatically.
And it probably was pretty cold, too, at night, I bet, in the town of Volcano.
Oh, yeah. You need a jacket. But I knew that going ahead because I'd been there once before. take a rain slicker. Take something to wear at night when you go out and find a local restaurant and or bar. And but in the daytime, you know, you're hiking around or biking around like I was this time down in the national park, you can work up a pretty good sweat.
Yes. Yeah. It really is a fascinating island. And on Oahu, have you ever heard of the Stairway to Heaven?
Yes, I have.
That's on my bucket list to do that, and they actually refurbished it, and it's actually a stairway up to a World War II radio post, and they refurbished it, but they shut it down like right after they refurbished it, and you get ticketed, you can get arrested too for going up it, and it's just, I've always wanted to do that. That's one of my bucket list items.
But there are still people that crawl over the fence and do it anyways, right? I think.
Yes, there are, but usually the neighbors report them, and then when they come back down, they usually are fined. There's also a back way up it if you want to go the back way, but it's a very treacherous trail.
Those Instagrammers, what can I tell you?
I know. definitely. Let me ask you about the East Coast, because you spent a lot of time growing up on the West Coast. New England states, but you know, Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont. What did you find up there that fascinated you?
Well, I had an extra special reason to go there. Both of my kids went to college in Boston at different times. So I had basically 8 years when I was doing a fall vacation in somewhere in New England to visit them, and also just to spend an extra week just going around visiting. And my wife and I each year pick someplace different in New England to go. So 1 year we rented a house on a little place called Toddy Pond up near Blue Hill, Maine, and stayed there for a week with some friends who rented a neighboring house, and discovered Acadia National Park and discovered lots of different ways to eat lobster. Another time, we went up to the White Mountains of New Hampshire, and which I'd never been to before, and found that just, you know, worthy of being a national park. I mean, it's mostly national forest land with a couple of state parks, like Mount Washington State Park in between, and just, you know, raw, unencumbered nature that's been there since, colonial days and before. I mean, it was one of the first places sighted by the English settlers when they first came to Massachusetts. They could see, the air was so clear in those days that from Boston Bay, you could look up and see the snow-capped White Mountains, and that's why they got their name.
Wow, that's incredible. I didn't know that.
And so another time we went to Vermont, you know, to see the Green Mountains and Lake Champlain, and to visit some friends of my wife's that live up there. And of course, you go to Ben and Jerry's, but the funny thing about it. The famous Ben and Jerry's store had a line down the block to buy ice cream there the night we were in Burlington. So we thought, I'm not going to wait an hour for ice cream. I don't care if it's the original Ben and Jerry's or not. So we went into the CVS store opposite, and in their freezer, they've got Ben and Jerry's ice cream. So we bought our Ben and Jerry's at CVS and went out and sat down on a park bench and ate it in front of the Ben and Jerry's store.
There you go. You know, did you get a chance to go to the top of Mount Washington?
Yes, we took the Cog Railway up.
Isn't that a fun trip? Isn't that so much fun?
Yeah, I wanted to do the drive up too on the famous road, but never got a chance to do that. Kind of ran out of time, but I'm glad that we took the little train up and had a chance to hike around some up on the top, where it's just a different, again, it's a different world up there than what's at the bottom. We stayed at the Mount Washington Resort, which is there down at the bottom of the mountain, and it's the last of what used to be 22 great hotels that existed in the White Mountains, and basically for the wealthy families of Boston, New York, to go up and spend their summers there. So the Mount Washington Hotel is the last of what used to be 22 of these grand Victorian-era hotels.
We went there, I think it was, it was last year we went up there, and I remember telling my wife, we need to just stop by the Mount Washington Hotel. I'd read about it. I'd never seen it before. It's so majestic. It's worth, even if you're not staying there, worth a visit to just, you know, go to the lobby, check out the giant porch and everything. And it blew my mind that there used to be so many hotels just like that up there, and there's only one left.
Yeah, it's incredible that they've all disappeared. You know, if they hadn't been torn down in the 60s and 70s, I'm sure there would be a couple now that would be turned into really fancy, expensive, nice hotels. But by the time that happened, they were all gone, except for the or they were so decrepit they had to tear them down anyways. And it's kind of the same thing that happened in the Adirondacks, but they were able to save those great camps largely because they were still owned by very wealthy families, and they maybe didn't use them anymore. Maybe the Rockefellers went to the Bahamas or the Virgin Islands instead, but they still owned the great camp. And these societies were formed to basically nonprofit groups to save them and turn them into hotels again, which is what I did in the Adirondacks when I went up there. I stayed in a couple of those, Sagamore Camp and then White Pine. Two of the great camps there where people can now stay that used to be the private, you know, luxury wilderness enclaves of the wealthy families of New York City.
It really, yeah, that I love that part of the country. My wife and I explored it last year and just fell in love with it. Went up to the top of the White Mountain on the Cog Railroad, as you suggested. We got lucky. It's very windy up there. But my sister, who lives in Gorham, New Hampshire, which is also on the Appalachian Trail, by the way, she told me it's very, very rare that it's clear enough up there that you can see all the way to the Atlantic Ocean. And I felt we were very lucky to get up there the day. For 30 minutes, it was clear enough that you could see all the way across Maine. It was really a spectacular sight.
Yeah, that is, yeah. Yeah, it wasn't clear. It was sunny when I was up there, but there were clouds all around. So we really couldn't see the bottom, but we at least had some sunshine at the top. So it wasn't freezing in the middle. I guess we were there in September. It wasn't freezing in the middle of September. But there's a great little museum up at the top, too. I don't know if you went to that.
Yes.
Yeah, there has an exhibit on all the people that have died on Mount Washington, either falling off or hiking or getting caught in a blizzard, and also the intrepid, heroic rescue teams that go out and save people that to get into trouble on the mountain, because it has, until recently, it had, correct me if I'm wrong, it had the highest recorded ground wind speed ever recorded on planet Earth, right?
That's what I understand. Yeah, they talked about that on the way up there. And I think that the day that we were up there, or pretty much any day you go up there, it's not far off the record. It is so windy up there. It's unbelievable.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It's incredible.
It really is a spot. Well, you know what? I could sit here and chat with you all day. We could go through all the 50 states. I love having you on the podcast and the radio show. It's so much fun. As we've gone over all three books, Joe, it's just such a pleasure to chat with you. I highly recommend, if you're looking for road trips this summer, any of the three books, The 1,000 Drives, The 100 Parks, or The 50 States and 5,000 Ideas from National Geographic. Joe, as always, thank you so much for your time.
Oh, thanks for having me on. It's always a pleasure, and I hope to do it again sometime.
You've been listening to the Travel with Hawkeye podcast. I'm Mark Hawkeye Lewis. The world is out there. Your adventure awaits, but please be safe, my friends.